Previously on Lost.
You cannot change anything. You can't. Even if you try to, it wouldn't work.
Why not?
Whatever happened.
Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason. Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
Horse?
You know Nice Cole.
You gotta find me, John. You gotta find me. And when you do, you'll find him.
Who?
Jacob.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
We have to go back!
We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost rewatch podcast for Season 5, Episode 10, He's Are You. And if you were in a Dharma jail, what sandwich would you want? My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I'm going with a grilled cheese with tomato.
My name's Joanna Robinson, and I'm going to go with the ultimate childhood comfort, the sandwich my grandma used to make for me, which is Skippy Smooth Peanut Butter on Wonder Bread.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I'm going out, I'm going out with turkey, bacon, lettuce, and tomato. It's a TBLT on sourdough, because that is, I think, probably the best sandwich.
Quick question.
In my opinion.
Quick question. Does your TBLT on sourdough, which sounds amazing, A, is the bread toasted?
Yes.
B, is there like a condiment of some kind on there?
I mean, you can really go so many different ways with that. You could just classic mayo, okay. Little Dijon mustard. You could get a little bit of each. Yeah, it's
love that you for know. You.
Yeah. Oh, it would be a delightful meal to eat in a Dharma jail and be served by 12-year-old Ben Linus.
Love that.
We're your hosts, and you're listening to The Storm. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. The podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island for the very first time. If this is your first time, I'm sure it's very confusing. Each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, there's a calm section, where we're all confused, that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers. Then, there's a second section called The Storm. Spoiler, we're still confused in there. It's a storm of spoilers, discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. If you look down at your podcasting device, or look up at your podcasting device, I don't want to orient you in a way that you don't want to be oriented, you'll see time codes that will tell you when the calm starts, when the storm starts, so you can navigate as needed. You might notice there's a bit of time before the calm starts. That's because I want to tell you how to support the show besides just listening. You go to patreon.com/stormspoilers, and there you could sign up for a monthly subscription fee, and in return, we will shower you with bonus content. It's not only access to our Slack and ways to like chat with all of us. We do a weekly watch of the next episode of Lost for the podcast. We watch monthly movies. We answer your mailbag questions for bonus podcasts. Every week we talk about different pop culture storms we're chasing for bonus podcasts. And there's a bunch of other stuff. Joanna recently just brought the book club, which is organized in our Slack and through our Patreon subscribers, onto Zoom, so people could see each other's faces and be excited by literature. Apparently that went okay, because there's another book called Book. Joanna, what are you guys reading next?
Yeah, we had a really good time. We discussed Passing last week in the Zoom, and we had like a sweet little turnout, and it was really great to hear what everyone thought. I loved it. So yeah, we're doing it again next month. On April 4th, we will be discussing Leigh Bardugo's Shadow and Bone, which is, you know, a book a lot of people have already read because it was a big best-selling genre hit. It has been turned into a Netflix series starring none other than Westworld's very own Ben Barnes, big, big favorite in our Patreon Slack, Ben Barnes. So we will be discussing Shadow and Bone on April 4th. So, you know, if you're part of the Patreon, if you're a member of the Slack, you can like hop in, click on the Zoom link and just hang out with us for an hour on a Sunday and talk about a good book. So that's the plan. Of course, as you know, that's not the only way that you can be in touch with us, hang out with us. You can always find out what we're up to on our website, stormpodcast.com. You can always email us, host@stormpodcast.com. I've got a little bit of bad news for everyone except Dave, who is always trying to keep the run time on this show shorter, which is that we don't have any email discussion this week, only because, to be perfectly honest with you...
Wait, let me guess. You hacked into HBO Now and somehow linked the Snyder Cut to the Tom and Jerry button?
I was busy. No. To be really honest with you guys, as you may have heard, Dave and I are working on a book and we're on a pretty fun deadline this week. So I did not have time to dig through your emails. I'm so sorry. I will look through them next week. So please keep on sending them over. I'm positive we're going to talk about stuff in the storm that we're going to get wrong this week. So we look for your corrections.
We have plenty of reason to send us emails.
We also don't have any reviews, just because simply no one has left any reviews since February 25th. So this is just a reminder that we love to have those reviews. They make a big difference in terms of us reaching new lost fans. So if you could drop us a review if you haven't yet, we'd so appreciate it. You can also tweet at us at Storm Podcast. That's where we run our weekly history poll. This week's poll, a little behind the curtain peek, involves at least one handsome Iraqi face and a boot. So we will get there. and if you're a member of our Patreon, where you can hear all kinds of bonus episodes, et cetera, you can live watch the next episode, Whatever Happened, with Neil in the Slack this weekend on Saturday, and find out what's going to happen to baby Ben.
We're going to test a theory.
So let us go now to Neil himself, Neil Miller. Neil, what happened on Lost this week?
Oh, quite a bit happened on Lost this week. This episode, He's Our You, was directed by Greg Yatanis and written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz. This episode aired on March 25th, 2009, and it takes place 2 days after the arrival of Ajira, Flight 316, on the island. In flashbacks, we are reminded of some of the times in which Saeed was very good at killing, from saving his brother from the tough task of killing chickens as a kid to assassinating Charles Widmore's collaborators as an adult. We also get to look at how Ilana conned and captured Saeed so that she could get him on Ajira Flight 316. On the island, the Dharma Brass have questions for their new captive, and when Saeed doesn't feel like talking, they take him to see their local interrogator and pharmacist, Oldham, as played by William Sanderson. Once he is thoroughly under the influence of some psychedelics, Saeed delivers his own rendition of the story of Flight 815 and the Oceanic 6. It is very good and very accurate, but no one believes him. Elsewhere in Dharmaville, Hurley takes time away from his job in the cafeteria to hit Kate with the hot goss about Sawyer and Juliet living together. Later, Kate and Juliet talk it through just like adults while working in the motor pool. Back in Dharma Jail, Saeed meets Roger Workman, then agrees to help Tiny Ben Linus escape to join the others. And after Horace and the Dharma Brain Trust decide that they're going to kill Saeed, a plan is put into action. Baby Ben uses a flaming Dharma van as a distraction while he and Saeed escape into the jungle. The whole thing ends with Saeed and Mini Ben being interrupted on the road out of Dharmaville by Jin. After knocking out Jin, Saeed does what he thinks he's meant to do, shoot a teenager. Fun fact about this episode. This episode features both young Saeed in a flashback and young Ben on the island. This is the first time in the series that two main characters both appear as children in a single episode. Shout out to Lostpedia. That's a really good one. This week's column question, this is more of a style thing. I'd just like to know which version of the Dharma jumpsuit you would rather wear, the tan, as modeled by Hurley and Jack, or the dark blue, as modeled by Kate and Juliet. I think the answer for me is clear. It's the very, probably significantly more flattering dark blue, but I'm curious here with you guys.
Yeah? Motor pool all the way. I know...
Team Motor Pool.
I know nothing about cars, like Kate Austin. I feel like Kate Austin would know a little bit more about cars than Kate does in this episode. But like Kate Austin, canonically, I don't know a camshaft from the band Drive Shaft. Does that work?
Sure.
But
I
would try to get in the motor pool so I could wear the blue jumpsuit.
Yeah. Dave, do you have a Dharma jumpsuit preference?
I mean, I want to go with blue jumpsuit because anything that's close to like a yellow makes my skin tone take on like a complementary shade. So if I wear like a green, my skin looks yellow. Or if I wear like a yellow, my skin starts to take on a green just because my body doesn't know how to handle my specific type of multi-ethnicity. So definitely dark blue. And also why I like lean towards blacks and purples in the first place, because at least then you're going to look more red and like alive.
All right. So that's three for dark blue.
Yeah, team dark blue.
It's obviously the best Dharma uniform.
Well, my further question is, like, why didn't other jobs get color-coded? Why is it just everyone else and the motor pool?
Well, there's Brzezinski. He has a dark blue, right?
Oh, does he? Okay.
I don't know. Like I continually blocking
tan.
Out Redzinski.
Okay, maybe he's in tan. Fine.
His Redzinski's is more of a light blue or a gray. Whereas like Phil and Horace and LaFleur all have tan. So I think there's one more color at least, but the dark blue is the winner, I think.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Redzinski's like a gray. Fair enough. Actually, I want a gray now that I know it's an option.
I think they should have had
colors all along.
Why don't they have green? Green should definitely be an option.
Mm-hmm.
Like the workmen, Jack and Roger should have green. That's what I think. So.
Sure. Yeah, well, we don't want Roger to have any nice things, though. So he can have whatever.
So tan for you, Roger.
We're back in a Saeed episode that has a very interesting twist ending, which we appreciate here in Lost, but here in the Storm Lost Rewatch podcast, we're going to talk about the episode of television as an episode of television. I want to start not with Saeed and not with Ben and not with flashbacks at all, but rather our B story of lunchroom gossip. Coming to full fruition with some of our favorite characters. So we have Kate finding out about Sawyer and Juliet via Hurley, who is killing it with the sauces that bring out the ham, which I love in a episode where we also meet Oldham, whose name is spelled Old Ham. I appreciate the meta ham joke.
Hurley's working with the new ham.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is working with the old
with
ham.
The old ham.
There you go.
Ham of science, ham of faith is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
Later, Juliet decides to just have the conversation with Kate in the motor pool because she was afraid she wasn't able to bring it up herself. And then later, Sawyer gets to talk to Kate about why she came back, only to be flaming van rudely interrupted. Joanna, is this a good arc for the triangle we don't like?
I will say this, the triangle or the quadrangle, if we prefer, to include Jack in there.
I guess we only get sad eyes Jack at the lunch table, and that's his like contribution, but fair.
Yeah, we already got Jack's reaction.
Yeah, and he's being chiller than Kate about it. Right? Like, when he found out about it, like, when he walked into their room, I guess he doesn't have a stake in it, right? Because he's like, I don't know. Okay, let me rewind that. He walks in their house, and he clocks that, like, Juliet lives there, and he's like, okay. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Whereas Kate's like, what do you mean they're together? Like, what do you mean? And Hurley's being both kind of dumb, and Hurley's doing his job a little bit, which is to be audience surrogate, right? Which is, who didn't see that one coming? Like, right, well, this is not the last we'll get of those little ironic Hurley observations, right? But and you know, used a little bit of his emotional intelligence to clock that dynamic between the two of them, but is not using his emotional intelligence to realize where that would land for Kate, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the more insensitive moments for Hurley, and there are very few. And so then when it comes to, like, Kate and Sawyer having a conversation, or Juliet and Kate having a conversation, I don't love, and I've said this before in The Storm, I don't love how edgy Juliet is around Kate. I would love to see a little bit more confidence from Juliet in this, we can assume, multi-year relationship she's had with Sawyer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't love that. But I do like the dynamic between Sawyer and Kate, that conversation, because he's just very much like, you don't, all of a sudden you're interested in it again. All of a sudden there are stakes you actually care about, right? Like, I didn't care. I think I mentioned this before. I didn't care who Kate chose really between Jack and Sawyer. I mean, I did, but I didn't. But like, I am very invested in Juliet and Sawyer's happy home not being broken up. As a Sawyer, mm-hmm. like that's the whole thing in this episode, right? Is he's like, I'll help you, Saeed, but to a point, because I've got a home that I've built and a life, a pretty good one, that I would like to protect, and I feel as protective as Sawyer does about that life. And so when he goes over to talk to Kate, you're like, no, 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 right? And then mm-hmm. when he says to her, like, why'd you come back? Like, why are you here to mess up? I figured it out, and here you fucking are. I am so emotionally invested in that, and in that, and people making good, healthy choices, and my fear that they won't. So it takes a dynamic. Like I said, I don't love Juliet's degree of insecurity, but it takes a dynamic that used to make me roll my eyes, and now all of a sudden I'm massively invested. So
yeah,
what do you guys think?
I think Juliet's insecurity comes from the writers being like, remember she watched all the Bear Cage stuff, and trying to think that, like, they're tracking a consistent character. But I also think that doesn't give a lot of credit to the reality in the story world that they've been there for 3 years, and what sort of trapped in a bear cage on day 40 something of being on an island of mystery is going to outplay 3 years in Dharmaville. So I do think that she would have more confidence just from what we know about Juliet. She's not a person who lacks in projecting confidence, I mean, when she doesn't have it even.
On the one hand, that's true. On the other hand, like, her previous relationships were with, like, Goodwin and her shitty husband, who, like, ex-husband, who, like, I think cheated while they were married, and certainly, like, flaunted his new relationship in front of her.
Ah, the guy that got hit by a bus.
Yeah, love that for him. So, like, maybe we can see some foundational insecurities there. And then also, you know, people will point this out to us if we don't mention it here. Of course, there is that scene where Sawyer talks to Juliet about seeing Kate, and, like, when he saw Kate and Claire in the clearing and stuff like that. So she knows, like, how much Kate was sort of in Sawyer's head and heart. I still just think a couple years would... I would just like her to have... Like, I understand feeling somewhat threatened, but I would just like her to feel a little bit more... You're Juliet! You rule! You deliver babies and fix cars! Kate doesn't even know anything about cars, Juliet. You're fine. So, I don't know. That's where I land.
Yeah.
I mean especially because you don't want to see, like, two women catfight over a man. That's really not what I want to see. So, you know.
Right, and I think that's probably what part of what makes me like that, the Juliet, the motor pool scene, a little bit more, because they sort of just work it out really simply, it seems. Plus, I just think that they have really, I don't know, Evangeline Lilly and Elizabeth Mitchell have good on-screen chemistry, so I think it works. And then you add Josh Holloway to that, and you're in really good shape.
Not you, Jack.
But I do. I kind of appreciate how good this seems to resolve within this episode, where it's just like Kate finds out, they have a conversation. She and Juliet have a conversation. She and Sawyer kind of have a conversation, and it's not 100% so solved.
So it's done?
But,
it's all tied up with a bow in this episode, Neil.
But, you know, for a B story, it does okay.
Kate does say she came back for a reason.
Right.
And then gets interrupted by a fire. So we don't know what Kate was going to say there. You know what I mean?
Right.
No, we certainly don't. Certainly have no idea what Kate's going to say.
Bleepity bleep bleep. I mean, we know, but like, and just shout out to Hurley, just like thriving in his role, and mm-hmm. and just like, you know, I bet he's like already made friends with everyone in the kitchen. I bet he knows everyone's names already. You know what I mean? Like,
he's right. Just, this is you just have to believe that there's some form of Hurley living his best life. As a member of the Dharma Initiative, it's so clear immediately where that Hurley is just like, maybe, you know, I don't have to worry about being a lottery winner here. No one's trying to kill me yet.
I like that Hurley was one of the Oceanic Six because it put him like very central in that section of the story. But, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of like Hurley having the best time, I kind of wish that he had stuck with the Dharma crew. I think he would have had a fun 3 years in the Dharma mm-hmm. Initiative. So,
yeah.
All right, so let's go back to the main thrust of the episode, which is the Ben and Saeed of it all. Flashback-wise, we get to Return to the Docks. Well, we go further back than that, but mainly in terms of a thrust of this episode that's not thematic about, is Saeed a killer? We get to go back to the docks and see how Saeed actually ended up handcuffed on Ajira Flight 316. I'm glad to have an airliner that I pronounced correctly that we could talk about for the rest of the series. Goodbye, old Flight 815. I don't know how excited I was when I realized that this episode's flashback was going to pivot from like a meditation on, you know, does childhood trauma slowly turn you into a killer to an explanation about how someone got on the plane. But then I did remember we don't know how some of the people got on the plane, so I guess that's going to have to do. But we do start with the chicken killing scene, and as Neil pointed out, Velocipedia having a young Saeed in the same episode as a young Ben, and sort of like using the flashback to draw to both like remind us why we don't like Ben and why we like Saeed, but to also draw parallels between those two characters, both when we meet them in the time period, Saeed's very much in the Henry Gale position of having to like hide his identity in a jail cell, and therefore like you could draw some connections through obviously childhood trauma, be it chicken killing or an abusive workman, you know, all the way to, is this some sort of weird time loop predestiny, which we can talk about, but I feel like that's the ending. What I want to talk about is they build to this huge torturer, and he's a dude from Deadwood who gives you LSD. Is in an episode about some of the most antagonistic people in Lost. How do we feel about Oldham being sort of nested in as a like we're building to him like it's a horror movie? It's like who's gonna walk out of this teepee, and he's playing like this record. I was about to say old fashioned record, but again, we're in 1977 playing a record, and it's E.B. White.
Yeah, you should.
E.B. Farnham.
E.B. White. What? Someday.
What's E.B. White?
He's the author of Charlotte's Web.
Oh, someday. Yeah. It is.
Old Ham.
Old Ham.
All right. So you went on a whole journey everywhere. So, but you want to talk about Oldham right now, which is, well, something that I thought was really interesting when I was reading the contemporaneous recaps that I like to read, is that a bunch of people thought that was they fell for it, a Faraday fake out. Like, a lot of people thought they were building to that guy being Faraday, you know, and there's a part of me that like sort of wish like Faraday had like gone off the deep end and was now just like the experimental drug guy. Like that would be kind of fun. I mean, it doesn't make sense for Sawyer to be he's our you, which is a great, I think it's a great line and a great episode title. He would just been like, it's Dan, but not the Dan you remember. Something like that. You know what I mean? But yeah, I guess a bunch of people thought Dan Faraday was going to walk out of that tent. I like that it's William Sanderson. This is, I think, the fourth Deadwood actor so far.
Let's count them. So now we have William Sanderson.
Uh-huh.
We had... Trixie from Deadwood played Colleen on Lost.
Paula Malcolmson. Yep.
Sawyer's Khan.
Yep. Kim Dickens.
Kim Dickens.
As Cassidy.
Who was amazing. Yes. What's the other one?
Robin Wiegert.
Oh, that's right.
Calamity Robin Jane Wiegert. Plays Juliet's sister. So that's just to go back to my whole, like, in this time of television, we were really all fishing from a pretty small white pond. So, like I said, we'll get more Deadwood actors before the day is done here. But yeah, we're up to four. So,
yeah, I mean, and I really appreciate this character, Oldham, more now that I've seen Deadwood and can appreciate William Sanderson, I feel like, a little bit better. I do sort of enjoy as a narrative trick so the fake out of, because there is a sense of dread as they are taking Saeed to the interrogator and then tying Saeed to a tree, where I'm like, oh no, I don't want to watch this. I don't want to watch Saeed get tortured.
I've watched
now.
This too much Black Sails to think this ends well.
Right. And so, like, if you're watching that as a calm person and you don't know that Saeed's about to launch into this amazing rendition, this drugged up rendition of his time on the island, I can understand there's some trepidation there. And then what a relief it is that it's, they just give him some drugs and Saeed laughs for, I believe Lostpedia says this is only the third time that Saeed has laughed on Lost.
That makes me really sad.
I know, right? Because, you know, Naveen Andrews, just like when they give him the drugs and they're like, go for it, he just goes for it and comes alive in a new way. And I really like that. And also the interplay between Sawyer's face, Josh Holloway's face, as he's as Saeed is rolling out the actual truth about what happened, as to whether he's going to out him. And he comes very close. This is probably the only good thing Radzinski ever does, is interrupt before someone can ask, wait, who's Sawyer? So, but yeah, I know. I really like this scene. Like this scene quite a bit.
I like
Make Saeed fun. That's my, you know, that would be my challenge. Make Saeed fun challenge.
It is a kind of a challenge to squeeze some fun in this episode, which isn't to say, like, not fun is sort of like bad, which is not what I'm pointing out, but it's like, this is a very serious episode that ends with a child getting shot. So we have to take our fun and drug trip Saeed and love quadrangle, which is just a square.
Well, yeah. Cause like once we get back to the Ben storyline, we just go down a hill of darkness.
Oh yeah.
Where it's like, it's been, we get to see some really tough stuff. Results of Ben and his relationship with his father, and then of course the child gets shot, but
yeah,
so you know, I mean, it's good to have a little moment of levity.
I think the doubling down on the Roger Workman physical abuse is necessary at this point in the story, because we've already seen the pretty intense emotional abuse that from the Ben flashback episode, and so having to return to this and having sort of to remind people that Roger Workman was bad, I appreciate that they took it up to the next level from a storytelling standpoint. Doesn't make it any easier to watch, but does, I think, sort of drive home that idea of like there are bad dads that, you know, tell you they don't love you when they're drunk on your birthday, which is like, you know, 8 out of 10. And then there's those bad dads that then lay their hands on you, which is like 10 out of 10. It's there's no escape physically or mentally for baby Ben.
So Sterling Bowman, who's the young actor who plays young Ben, I think is some of the best casting the show ever does. I think mm-hmm. he's so good. He's so, like, when he's being, you know, knocked around by Roger, like, you really feel for him. But then there are also the moments where you see Michael Emerson in him, you know, at the same time.
Yes.
It's an incredible, incredible performance from a really nimble little actor. But I do think that sympathy for Ben, where you even see, I think you even see Saeed feeling it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even Saeed, who we know the whole time, a lot of this episode is being like, well, I'm going to have to shoot this child, is so, like, sweet to him too. Do you know what I mean? And not, mm-hmm. I don't read it, and I think this is the genius of Naveen Andrews' performance. I don't read it as just manipulation to get Ben where he wants to get him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I read that's there, that he can relate to Ben. We get this shamelessly ripped off from the Mr. Echo origin story, another sepia washed origin story of a brown pair of brothers. Don't love that. But, you know, like, he can relate to Ben in that way. And so part of that is a narrative trick, because Saeed's like, I know what I'm here to do. And when he says, I'll take you to the others, like, you kind of think, like, okay, maybe Saeed's just going to take him to Richard, I guess. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what he thinks he needs to do.
I mean, it really does, up until the point where he knocks out Jin.
Yeah.
Well, even after the point where he knocks out Jin, up until the point where he literally just shoots Ben.
Yeah.
It does seem like Saeed is empathizing with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously understands where this all goes. You know, and then I think the decision to shoot him is worth some interrogation, I guess.
Yes,
well, but yeah,
because it's the classic, you know, would you kill Hitler sort of thing,
right?
That you know, we'll see.
On this week of the Oprah Winfrey Meghan Markle Prince Harry conversation, I think it's worthwhile floating this thing that Katie Rich, friend of the pod, Katie Rich, and I like to say to each other about royals, which is like, hurt people, right? And mm-hmm. so traumatize people. So like Ben to watch Roger traumatized Ben, and to watch Ben in the future pay that forward and be like, well, I will traumatize everyone in the world. Like, you know, that's why Lost is so good and so interesting. And which is why also I hate the character of Rudzinski, because we never get to see who his bad dad was. Maybe
right.
That would help me feel like he was a better character.
Rudzinski was just pooped out of the island, fully formed, building a model. And that's how we always have to remember him.
Are you saying that the island is Rudzinski's bad dad? Because that also probably tracks.
I mean, the island would be a bad dad.
So before we get to the escape, there is the whole question about what to do with Saeed that's threatening Sawyer's way of life. And Horace is not shaping up to be a great leader of the Dharma Initiative. Really seems to be like whiffing lots of major decisions. We already know too drunk to see the birth of his son, but also it seems to be very swayable as a, I don't know, head of the coven or the Dharma Initiative middle management. The guy who isn't high enough management that he can stay off the island, but he's on the island, which is apparently below Ann Arbor, according to the threats that we hear in this episode.
I mean, I think what we're learning about Horace's time as the, you know, the island's or the Dharma Initiative's chief dude, is that he's really lucky that those people got sent back in time, because without like LaFleur, I don't know if Horace makes it. Without all these other people there to help, you know, make sure whatever happened. Horace sucks at his job and just in general.
Well, and he calls this execution vote, and Rosie Watch, which is in the corner, but could be, Rosie votes to kill. you know, Rosie
the queen of the weed brownies.
Queen,
right?
Of the weed
very
brownies.
Disappointed. I mean, I'm not surprised by Horace being amenable to the killing. He like I said, he sucks. Rudzinski also terrible dude. Phil, get him out of here. But Rosie, I expected more.
Yeah.
And also Amy a little bit.
Amy has kind of her, like, I need to protect my precious baby Ethan, who definitely won't grow up to break every bone in Scott Steve's body.
Right. The rest of us are like, Amy, you need to give up on this Ethan kid.
Well, but I think the interesting thing is if I were Amy in that situation, I would be like, these are the people who demanded my husband's body, like, a while ago. Like, fuck them. I'm surprised that they just didn't pull on that from the character thing. The child part is very, you know, nice, I guess. But that does, I guess what we're supposed to be doing is thinking here. Because Ben was shot by Saeed, and there's baby Ethan. And presumably we think both baby Ethan and baby Ben, they grow up to be work buddies, getting people back on the island. So it was interesting in our live watch at the end of this episode. You have a whole bunch of questions about whatever happened and being like, well, that is the title of next week's episode. So maybe we're just supposed to sit with these questions and the show is giving us just enough to be very confused, but not enough necessarily intuit an answer.
Shooting young Ben is the ultimate test of whatever happened. And I think putting it right at the end of the episode is so... I mean, imagine watching this and then having to wait a week to know, like, what the rules... Like, what are even the rules on this island anymore?
Yeah.
It would have been an amazing week of
I watched Michael put a gun to his head off island and be unable to fire it. Does the island want this to happen?
Oh, you guys, I read a bunch of recaps that were basically like a robot with steam coming out of its ears. Every one of them was like having a logical meltdown where they're like, but if Ben, and then, but if it, just paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs of speculation. But I will say a pretty constant note, you know, and I think we would have stumbled to the same thing is like, okay, but probably he's not dead. Because
sure.
Probably existence would blink out if he were dead in that moment. Or, like, you know, people don't stay dead necessarily on the island. But a bunch of people were like, a bunch of recappers, not just one, but a bunch were like paging Dr. Jack Shepard to do another bit of surgery on Ben Linus. So...
I mean, Jack fell out of a plane once to save Ben. Why not twice?
Exactly. This time I get to cut open his front. Woo! Right? Jack is, that's...
Sure. That's how Jack gets excited about surgery, because he's, as we know, a terrible doctor.
Yeah. It's an interesting loop that we're going to have to figure out. Again, also, we've seen Locke get straight up shot by Ben and live through it just by, like, island magic.
I mean, we saw Locke.
Well, he was also missing a kidney.
Murdered
kind of
by Ben and then come back once he was back on the island.
It is an island of mystery, so we're probably not watching straight up child murder. But this episode, I think, is a really good example of knowing you're going to leave everybody with this thing. It could be a potential time loop. It could not be a potential time loop, but thematically tying Ben and Saeed together in such a way where every time you're about to feel sympathy for one, it's sort of you're reminded that maybe they have bad intentions. For instance, Ben is bringing sandwiches to a dude in the jail cell, not because Ben is nice to all people. It's because he needs another to get him the heck out of there, and Richard's been ghosting.
He heard there's a hostel in jail.
He heard there's a hostel. And he's like, I know how to get out of here, and you need to get me out there, because I don't know where to go. Every time I leave, I just see a ghost mom.
I think it's not wholly manipulative. I think it's the closest he's gotten to sympathy since he got there was from Richard, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's like, okay, maybe the others can help me out of the situation. The Dharma Initiative certainly is not. They've seen my dad. They know who my dad is, and they're not helping me. So, you know, I think that's
one of the most compelling things about all of the Young Ben stuff we've gotten so far, mm-hmm. is that even though we get those moments where, like, we can tell that somehow the soul of Michael Emerson is in this kid, he seems like he's okay, and it's hard to believe that he becomes Ben at times, because he's kind of sweet. But I feel like getting shot in the chest might push you toward being kind of a bad guy.
I mean, well, but that's the question. That's the fun time loop question, right? Is like, mm-hmm. does Saeed shooting Ben in the chest push Ben into
getting Saeed to commit a whole bunch of murders?
Darth right? Ben territory is, in short, is Saeed the reason that Ben puts that stupid hat on many, many years from now? He's like dumb fedora. It's so funny because like he's wearing that fedora. And the reference to you know that, what is it called? Blacklist, right? That James Spader show where he just wears a fedora.
Oh,
a bunch.
Yeah.
That reference didn't exist yet, but that was like my first thought. I was like, oh, it's the James Spader fedora. But you know, they were making other jokes about it back in the old recaps. Anyway, yeah. Did Saeed cause this? Are we the causes of our own suffering? ? You know?
In this case, yeah. Literally. Just in case you weren't getting with all the bad the dad things. You know, the bad dads that get gassed or strangled on islands of mystery, or yeah. their corpse gets lost on that island of mystery, and then apparently it becomes a ghost that can make corporeal lanterns. If that wasn't enough, Saeed might have actually just caused some of the worst things in his life by shooting the little baby Ben. Time is complicated, man. Maybe it should have been Faraday in that teepee. He would have had some thoughts. I bet he's broken through time with his LSD experiments. Actually,
that would have been really fun. And you know that Jeremy Davies would have just like made an entire banquet out of LSD Dan.
Actually, now that I'm thinking of it, I want a whole bottle episode that is William Sanderson as Oldham sort of mentoring Dan Faraday in the ways of psychedelics. This feels like a really good story that we might have lost to the writer's strike. I'm gonna believe that.
My story for what Dan's doing is he knows whatever happened except for Desmond. So he has traveled to Scotland and is Mandalorian-like on his way back to the island with baby Desmond.
Baby Grogu.
Because he's like, the only way we're going to get out of this is with the power of Desmond. And it's like, yeah.
Oh, that's a cute baby Desmond impression. Yes. So Neil, if you had a time machine, you mm-hmm. would not go back in time and kill baby Hitler. You would go back in time and write a bottle episode for Dan Faraday and hold him. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't think the Hitler thing would work, based on what I know. I mean, if we're operating by the rules of Lost, whatever happened. So there's nothing I can do. So you might as well just go back and do something fun.
Completely.
Hmm.
I mean, going back in time and writing a script seems like an interesting use of your time, but I don't want to value judge. I think so. We're following the canon of Neil, who's gone back in time. He's in New Zealand writing scripts and living the best life out of all of us.
Yeah, writing my adaptation of The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I'm like
that. I'm going to give to a young Peter Jackson.
I'm begging Horace to please stop giving me tan jumpsuits. It makes me look sickly. And then Brzezinski's over there being like, "He is sickly. He saw the model. Kill him."
Can I tell you a time travel / reincarnation theory I have?
Yes.
Yeah, or like, about all the time? Like real life?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like all the people who are really, really impossibly cool and confident in high school are time travelers. Because like, do you ever think about like, if I could go back to high school now, knowing what I know now about how
I think about this all the time.
I would be so cool. Not cool as in like hip and trendy, but cool as in doesn't give a shit. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so I'm like, but I knew some of those don't give a shit people in high school. And I'm like, What if they did figure out how to leap back into their own bodies? That's something that's a little rat brain idea I have from time to time. So
interesting.
No, I love it. I mean, I would do it.
If I could time travel back into my own body, quantum leap into my own body. Yeah.
I think I'd go further back than high school. I think I'd go back to like third or fourth grade.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the coolest kid in third grade, Neil.
Right? Miller. I would crush third grade.
I mean, if you're in a small enough town, that's really where you're proven, you know, you could make a lot of bank for your teenage years being awkward if you were the coolest kid for third, fifth grade, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
There's this episode is so interesting to me because, like, all right, so there's two things that I think are kind of copy-pasted over from other scripts in a way that feels a little lazy to me. One is the Mr. Echo brother opening. The other is the sexy assassin lady pulling one over on Saeed, which is lifted out of The Economist.
Right. And saving herself from the curse.
Yeah,
kicking him in the face before they had sex.
But The Economist is also written by Kitsis and Horowitz, so that's just them lifting their own work. So fine.
I love them a bit on the podcast, but just like this idea that to some screenwriters, there's like three spy scenes. It's like, oh, it's a spy thing. Good. I have three scenes we could do. Let's just mix it up in combination.
Okay, so that lady was German in a cafe. This lady's going to be Russian, but she's eating steak at a bar. It's different.
Mm-hmm. And wouldn't Saeed be on the lookout for like spies? No, because he thinks she's a prostitute.
He's got his eyes peeled for those prostitutes, though. But what is very, I think, sophisticated about this episode is this theme of determinism. Both as it pertains to, because free will versus determinism is like such a big thing in Lost, right? Mm-hmm. But determinism as it pertains to like time travel, right? Whatever happened, happened, like, et cetera. And our own identities, like our own natures, and which is a big, huge, overarching, like, overarching thesis of Lost, which is Ben telling Saeed he's a killer, you know? And Saeed being like, that's not who I want to be. I want to go build houses for people who don't have houses. And then being like, you know, actually, he was right. I am a killer. You know, like, can we escape our natures? Can we escape the things that people think we are? Like, I think that that's what makes the episode title so interesting because, like, when Sawyer says, and of course it would be Sawyer who would think this way, but when Sawyer's is like, he's our you, he's saying our you is a torturer. You know what I mean? I mean, he's old ham. He's not quite whatever it was that Saeed did to Sawyer in a series one, but like, that's who Sawyer sees Saeed as, right? He's our torturer. Yeah. He's our you.
And I think,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, and I think that that's what the opening scene is there for. It's a little clunky, and again, we don't need another sepia-toned brothers story. Mm-hmm. But it's there to set up this. I guess one of Saeed's traumas is that he is able to kill things, and everyone's been telling him that that's who he is for a lot of his life. And it's like, oh, good job. You're a great killer. We need that in the world. And it's like, wait, no, I don't know. Maybe we should talk to this kid.
It's especially rich coming from Sawyer, who, like, you know, with the episode LaFleur, like, really does show how much we can change from the part, you know, like, you know, if you ask Cassidy, for example, who Sawyer is, she's going to have a lot of opinions about who Sawyer is. But if she saw Jim LaFleur, she would be surprised, you know?
Sure.
And so this idea that, like, Saeed really wants to not be... I mean, Lost was not always the best at this plot line. Mostly, I think, for, like, culturally insensitive reasons. But Naveen Andrus has always been such a good performer. He's one of the recasts reminded me that he's one of very few actors on Lost to receive an Emmy nomination, actually. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, just, you know, you do, when Saeed is like soft, you're like, you want him to say soft, you know, and he just keeps getting pulled back in, and that's lost for you. So
yeah, I think I had another thought about the Sawyer thing. I think there's a lot in this episode, little stuff, that I think is there to show us how panicked both Sawyer and Juliet are sort of underneath. Like, they're not showing it, but stuff like when Juliet burns the bacon, and then stuff like Sawyer's whole face as the Saeed thing is going on, you're like, you're expecting them to react slightly more confidently, or like I expect these two to sort of have everything under control, but the episode definitely, I think, wants us to see little things that show the sort of under the surface panic that they're going through right now, because it's like, oh, this thing that we built for 3 years, this could really do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's a really interesting thing to watch as you're watching those two characters. And it's part of why, I don't know, I don't give Sawyer a pass for how he handles the Saeed thing, because he really does sort of try at the end to figure it all out. But it's part of why he doesn't, I don't know, I think ultimately he's not as sharp, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's, there's, because he values his place in Dharmaville so much with Juliet, it's like his sort of paranoid fear is amped up in a completely opposite direction than the rest of Dharma's paranoid fear, which is sort of about like the others. They're out there. Mm-hmm. They're going to break the truce. So it's really hilarious in that scene you're talking about to watch him and be with Sawyer at the very beginning, being like, they're going to torture Saeed. Saeed's hard, but like, best case scenario, he watches Saeed get tortured really bad. Worst case scenario, his entire life's over. And then suddenly, you know, not putting together the fact that these are psychedelic drugs. And as Saeed starts talking, it's like, who's going to believe any of that?
From the future. Obviously a truth award.
Yeah. Right?
Saeed. Naveen is so good in that scene. Oh yeah. My god. It's so good. But so is Josh Holloway, yeah, as you say.
Yeah, it's such a good scene, and I think it gets overshadowed by the twist at the end of this episode, but there's some really good performance stuff in here, and we should cherish it while we're on it.
And just revisit that like this little alleyway of Lost is a farce, right? Like, it's not as much of a farce as Namaste was, but still, you know, like Sawyer desperately trying to like figure it all out and hold it all together. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, and like, you know, credit to Sawyer. Like, I was reading some of the recaps were like, Sawyer is, you know, morally compromised, that he's more interested in preserving his home at Dharma than he is saving Saeed. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't know, he offered Saeed several outs.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's not entirely fair to be like, Sawyer didn't do enough, because there's that scene at the end where he's like, punch me in the face
punch
and we're
out
of here.
Yeah,
you know, there's a little bit of that. You can tell that Sawyer is being protective, but I don't at any point in this episode feel like Sawyer would have let them kill Saeed. Right?
I,
like, he
I
would
agree.
Have figured something out.
I agree.
They have enough history. So, yeah, you know, Sawyer did okay, I guess.
Yeah, he would have taken the firing bolts out of the rifle like a Danielle.
Here, speaking of Sawyer and the people who have been on the island for 3 years in 1977 or the 1970s, do you think at any point they had a conversation about killing little Ben? Him and Juliet? And I mean, Miles had to bring it up, right? It seems like a Miles thing.
1,000% Miles did, and Dan was like, no, you see Miles.
Right?
Whatever happened.
Right?
Yeah.
They haven't Ethan hasn't been around long enough to have this conversation, but they've been living with little Ben for 3 years.
Yeah, how did we get the Juliet finds out about Ethan thing and not hear anything about Juliet knowing that little Ben's walking around?
Oh, yeah, that's true. You know, Sawyer's like... cute kid, huh?
Yeah, like, and but that's like the Sawyer reaction. That's not the reaction I want to see. Ben hasn't done as much to Sawyer as he's done to Juliet.
And this Absolutely. Is my thing. The reason why they never bring it up is because at some point they actually had they sat down and had the full conversation. Like, should we kill this kid to prevent him from murdering everyone else? Or, like, because you'd have to think that as they got closer to when Ben actually kills, like, as Ben got older, if assuming they were staying in the 70s forever, then they would have to eventually figure it out, right? You know? You'd have to eventually be like, yeah, we can't just let him kill everyone. Or can we? I don't know. It's fun.
Well, you think you have it figured out, and you've come to peace with the Dharma Initiative getting gassed, and then little baby Ethan pops out, and you're like, I don't know what's happening anymore. Most of these people are going to die, but this guy I know lives.
Ugh. Do we owe it to Scott Steve to kill this baby?
To kill this baby? Maybe we just let him grow up to a full Mappother, and then you kill him.
Sure, yeah.
All right, I think that's going to be it for the calm, unless I'm missing something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we're going to do the corners, but other than that,
yeah, that's it. That means it's corner time. This week's first corner is the Jungle of Mystery moment. How can Ben be dead when he had to be alive for them to be there? Is Ben dead in the past and resurrected Ben in the future? Have we been living with a resurrected Ben? It's a Jungle of Mystery moment, and it's the one we were. It's the question we're supposed to have. So we're going to honor this mm-hmm. episode. There it is. The Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award. Oh, does it go to Ben or does it go to Jin? I'm going to give it to Jin. I think Jin gets like
Jin. Flipped. I think Jin gets the style points. Yeah.
He gets like flipped by Saeed.
That's it's a little hot.
Yeah, that's much better than just, you know, gravity taking its toll limp body.
Can I tell something? Can I tell you guys something about this award?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have told Dave this already or not. I don't know. But I just want to let our listeners know that I have informed Damon Lindelof about the existence of the Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award.
Oh.
And he was surprised. He was like, does someone really fall down in every episode? And I was like, well, you know, I mean, we'll skip an episode if no one did. And like, sometimes this is an inanimate object. And I gave him the example of the episode where with the Hot Pocket and Hurley in the kitchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I don't want to start an argument with you, Joanna. But there's a difference between being thrown and falling down.
Whoa.
So,
Damon Lindelof has
David Lindelof
has some
votes
questions.
Ben, baby Ben, for this week's award.
He has some questions about the Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award. So,
well,
I think he's just, I think for a second,
no,
maybe.
I love it. I love that Damon, we have finally created questions for Damon Lindelof. This is payback for so many.
Yeah.
I love it.
Guess what, Damon? It's our show, and being thrown cats is falling down. You don't like it?
Guess what, man?
Here's what I said.
Whatever happens,
Hurley,
happens in our corners.
Hurley throws the Hot Pocket, but then as soon as it hits the wall, then it falls down.
Yeah. No, the Hot Pocket one definitely counts.
Yeah, I know.
Excuse me, Mr. Lindelof, but I know about Newtonian physics, and okay.
I just really liked to use my name. It felt very active listening. I don't mean to start an argument, Joanna, but there's a difference.
You absolutely did start an argument, Damon. Too bad. All right, accent corner. We're gonna do the author of Charlotte's Web, the torturer of the sugar cube. Hit us up with William Sanderson, Joanna.
Okay, so William Sanderson, let's take a moment to appreciate him. We already talked about mm-hmm. his work on Deadwood. Folks who are a little older might remember that, like, one of his, I think the first time we really paid attention to him was the film Blade Runner. He's in Blade Runner. But also mm-hmm. he was on this TV series, Newhart, not the Bob Newhart show, but Newhart, where Bob Newhart played another guy named Bob who opened an inn. William Sanderson played a character who had two brothers. They were like supposed to be like yokels or whatever, right? And he's like, and he would say, this is my brother Daryl, this is my other brother Daryl. And he would say it all the time. The three of them would walk in. They barely spoke. He would speak. He's very garrulous. And then he would be like, this is my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl. And it was just like this very popular catchphrase in the 80s. It was just sort of like a what happened mm-hmm. moment for William Sanderson. So anyway, character actor William Sanderson of Newhart, Deadwood, Blade Runner, True Blood, Lost Fame. Where is he from? Let's start with Dave.
Canada.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Okay.
I'm going to say... the southern United States. There's just something... there's something underneath those accents that I've seen him do.
I was guessing that you guys were going to try to narrow down which southern state he is from, because I think it's like, obvious that he's from a southern United State. Which one would you say?
Well, but imagine how surprised you would have been if he was from Canada.
Right.
It's true.
I'm going to say Arkansas. It sounds like Arkansas to me.
Dave, I'm going to give you another swing at bat, and can you
guess a
southern state?
I'm trying to do the voice in my head. I'm going to say Tennessee.
He's from Memphis, Tennessee.
Woo!
That's a good one.
Got it.
I did it.
There you go.
I don't know how.
And he was great on Deadwood.
Fantastic on Deadwood. Fantastic probably in everything he's been in. You know what I don't have a memory of is looking at his face and being like, man, I wish this part of the movie was over. we also have a book club. We're back-to-back Joanna categories.
Oh no. So Carlos Castaneda, what do you guys know about Carlos Castaneda?
I don't know if I know anything.
Nothing. Got a tilde over the end.
Oh, great. Well, fun fact, when I used to work in an antiquarian bookshop in San Francisco, we used to shelve Carlos in the psychedelic section. So A Separate Reality is the book that Ben tries to give to Saeed, right? And it was written by Carlos Castaneda, and I'll read from Lostpedia. This allegedly non-fictional book is about a man's experience working with a self-proclaimed sorcerer. The authenticity of the book, along with the rest of Castaneda's series, has been a topic of debate since they were published. Part of the story is about the effects of plants that caused mind alterations, like mushrooms, that help people see. In the book, Don Juan talks of allies who can appear in any form, and of one in particular he calls Little Smoke. The copy seen in the episode is the Pocketbooks edition, first published October 1972. But yeah, Carlos Castaneda is like a very, very famously psychedelic author. So it makes sense that this book shows up in the psychedelic episode of Lost.
Excellent. Interesting.
I love it.
That reminds me of, I read a couple of books written by people who did not actually have publishing deals on the conspiracy theory that sort of inspired Stranger Things. And that book was sort of like, this is a real account. And then like three pages in, I'll be like, and the monsters came out at night. And you're like, okay, I'm just gonna take this book in its entirety at its face value. And you're going to get out of it what you get out of it. If the book ends and you think monsters are real, good job, book. If not, and you think it's a metaphor for something, great job, book. It sounds like this is a great way to teach people about hallucinogenic plants, but I would be interested to see what sort of plot gets hung on it. Maybe I'll read some psychedelic books. Our Saeed, Jarrah, reverse button watch. He's all undone. The arms are spread. They're strapped to a tree. He's going on a trip, and he's laughing all the way through it. Chest first.
Wait, is he like Zack Snyder's Superman?
He is like Zack Snyder's Superman.
Okay. Classic Zack Snyder Superman pose. No one else posed like that, just Zack Snyder Superman. Okay.
I hear we have a new format for our new corner, the Jeff Jensen Recap Nickname Award. So last week you introduced this corner, Joanna, where you would bring up one of the old recapping nicknames. I say old, and I'm now talking about, like, what, 10 years? Man, okay. Back in the day, instead of repeating the same name over and over again, we used to like to make funny nicknames. And Jeff Jensen, Lost Recapper, was very good at it. Joanna, what's the new
problem? Last week I just, like, I think it was like Poltergeist Papa or something like that, right?
Yeah,
for
was.
Christian Shepherd.
Poltergeisty Pop.
Yeah, Poltergeisty Pop, right, for Christian Shepherd, which was fun enough, but I thought of a new format for this category, which is that I tell you guys what the nickname is, and you try to be the first one to tell me who the character is, right?
All right. Okay. So that's Family Feud rules.
Family Feud. Wow. So here's...
It's going to require some speed. I don't know
how it's going to go. I believe in you. So just think about what happens in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Who would Jeff Jensen refer to as Booty Fett?
Ilana.
Ilana.
Oh, man.
She's got the bounty hunter.
Boozy with a Z?
No, no,
I said booty.
Booty.
Ooh. Look,
yeah, sorry, I guess I slurred that.
All three of those would have been Ilana in this episode.
Yeah, I heard boozy.
Still, boozy booty fest.
Still
don't
Ilana.
Feel great about any of it, but that's nope. Where we are.
I mean, Saeed does spend like, $260 on two drinks, so boozy fest would work.
Got to get that McCutcheon.
Exactly.
If I'm lost.
All right, the Ben's talking. So it's obviously a lie award. Actually does go to Ben, who tells his bad dad he brought him a sandwich when he brought that sandwich for Saeed.
Roger's like, I know you didn't.
You never brought me a sandwich in my life. Your life. Either's life.
Now this, I feel like this would only be a better joke if Ben actually went on later in life to kill his father with a sandwich.
Oh, poison sandwich.
Yeah, I know he gassed him, but if he poison sandwiched him in like season, what was that, season two, season three? That would have been an amazing callback.
Like an old ham sandwich.
It's the best time travel moment. Saeed tells the time traveling truth, but no one believes him. That is a classic time travel story trope. Love it. Definitely not old in this episode. Does it get old? Maybe it never gets old. I like. Because also, if I ever meet somebody who, like, even halfway plausibly tells me they're a time traveler, I'm going to try to yes-and them until they ask something like money from me. So, like, sure. If I'm the Terminator 2 person, like a Miles Dyson, I'm like, absolutely, I'll let you into the place of my work and you could fuck it up with explosions. And then they're like, you come. And I'm like, okay, show me your metal arm again. But, like, right up to personal bodily harm. That was a tangent. Joanna! It's time for Jungle of Kistery. This is where we decide who's going to kiss. You brought up earlier, you tease, that this week we get to do Saeed in a boot, which is good because at least boots have tongues. But last week, we had Namaste.
Wait. Okay, first of all, at least boots have tongues is one of the funniest things you've ever said. Secondly, boot-y-fet.
Booty-fet got tongue!
Meaning. A fourth meeting enters the chat.
There are layers to this.
Jungle of Kistery is where we talk about two characters or a character and an inanimate object, or maybe even two inanimate objects that should be kissing or touching or, you know, hugging or something. So last week for the episode Namaste, we put the poll up. I was actually a little surprised by this, but I shouldn't have been because they have been winning polls all along. So Jin and Saeed only got 8% of the vote. Sawyer and Saeed only got 12.4% of the vote. Sun's paddle in Ben's head. Usually something hitting Ben is pretty popular, and it did pretty well. 38.7% of the vote.
I mean, this has to be the closest top two we've had in a while.
But squeaking by, as they have done in the past, it's the roommate bros reunited. Sawyer and Hurley and their very long hug. So there you go. 40,
sometimes 49%. Sometimes a hugstery emerges and it can't be denied.
All right. So this week we've got a listener submitted. Vera submitted Saeed and drugs. They're very good together. Alicia submitted jumpsuit Kate and Juliet. You know, just chilling in the motor pool. We've got Redzinski and his model.
He does
love
that
model, the swan.
Disclaimer. Yeah, the swan model, we should say. Not a fashion model, a swan model. Disclaimer. We only put this in here because we really want Redzinski to lose because we hate him.
Sure.
Lastly, the boot that was promised, Ilana's boot in Saeed's face. So there you go.
I think you should definitely pull this as Booty Fett and Saeed and see see what Diana tweets.
Yeah, sometimes Diana has interesting interpretations of what we've written here in the notes. Sometimes I'm like, ooh, you didn't quite get it, but that's you tried. A for effort.
All right, our most 1977 thing. We had a brief argument about this, but what won out was interrogating people with LSD, which is just, you know, in a post 9/11 world, quaint. All right, the Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award. For a second, we also had nothing here. But then I remembered there's a poor gentleman who gets shot by Saeed really early on in the episode, and we kind of forget about him because he's not a child Ben. But he does die after saying, hold on, hold on, hold on, don't shoot. 300,000 or 400,000 euros. It's all yours. And then Saeed shoots him. He doesn't have a name, so we'll just call him the last of Widmore's men.
I think he does have a name somewhere, but I don't know if we find out yet.
Fair. All right. Yeah. Frank Lapidus, guess we're not going to Guam. Act Break Award goes to Oldham, who says, it's beyond your control, so fighting is a poor use of your energies. You see, whether you struggle or not, one thing's for sure, friend. You will tell us the truth. And then they push the...
He does.
They push the trumpet up the cliff. Yeah, he does.
I mean, this one wins. This wins for delivery.
Yeah.
More than anything else from William Sanderson.
It's that Tennessee twang.
It's that Tennessee twang. No official podcast check-in this week because we're on hiatus for the reasons I explained in the last podcast. So that means, without further ado, we are going to move to the storm right after this.
All right, now is the time of the podcast where we love to give some thanks to our Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or above. This is our small council. They get all the bonus content. So let's start with the newcomers. We've got Sean, and I'm going to pronounce it like the dancing duo Huff. Right? That's how...
Yeah, that looks right.
What is it, Julian? Okay. Roberto Alonso Villarreal, Sophie Raceman, Kevin Costello, Patrick Kelly, Angela Travis, Kurt Klein, Matthew Keane, Karen Frost Arnold, Fanny Martin, Ali Oman, Brad Moshenko, Vanessa Marshall, Addison Lee, Elise Ruoff, Anna Holmquist, Jenny Malone. Oh, I hope it's Jenna Malone, but it's not. It's Jenny Malone, David Woodley, Jackie Burns, and Danette. Thank you guys so much.
And I have people to thank as well. Thank you to Brittany Cano, Kelly Grady, Patrick Sullivan, Grace Richardson, Joshua Lang, Bethany Townsend, Danielle, Justin Young, Harrison Fox, John Stahl, Aaron Miller, Heather Ogden, Daniel Boltema, Adam Wells, Luis Collins, Michael Filippini, Michael Belitsky, Paul Tyrrell, Dre, and Christopher McGrain. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank this list of fine humans. Sean Stringfield, Warpstone, Derek Bachman, PP, Clark Ainsley, Dimitri Portnoy, Melissa Horsefall, Marianne Cotto, Nate, Robbie Rapace, Jose Cordova, Emily Ralph, Amy Gomez, Chris Miracle, Delane Mitchell, Amy Calhoun, Mark Tozier, Christina Sullivan, Saquon Gatling, and Reed Larson. Thank you all so much for being members of our small council. You guys are the best.
And welcome back to the storm. I just wanted to clear something up. Neil and I just talked about it. Definitely noticed that Neil was talking about the exact thing that Hurley does in Selma, Like and Hawk.
Did you see that note that I wrote?
Well, that's why I brought it up, is like I tried to plant a flag in it as soon as I noticed without spoiling it. So hopefully we didn't oversell.
I'm honestly pretty proud of how far into it I got without realizing that that's what I was
doing. I thought that's what you were doing, so I was trying to like really yes and you and like put a little...
I started to get to script and I was like, oh my god, is this this is like a lost thing from a couple episodes from now. I should probably stop talking.
I know, like when you first started it, I was like, oh, we should do a like, what script would you go back in time and write? And then I was like, oh, the fuck, that's a lost plot. And
there's
then
a I whole heard, episode about
and then
it.
I heard Dave be like, what a wild thing to do with time travel, write a script. And I was like, oh, Dave knows.
I feel like you're running. I feel like you would run out of things. That happened in the in the calm, and not to make the storm a thing about what times are almost fucked up in the calm. But I really wanted to also plant, like, Joanna, you said something like, what's going to happen? Is it just going to blink out of existence and say something like, yeah, if you altered time, I bet just all time would blink out white or something. And but I didn't. I resisted. it's tough. It's tough
here in the incident is coming.
We decided this week, as you might have noticed, to not pretend like Ben dies. That being said, I do want to talk about here in the calm and for this episode why you guys think they thought it was necessary to erase his memory. Because just in a cursory rethinking of the episodes we've watched, doesn't it make Ben even more diabolical and like shit if he knows that Saeed's coming back and has slowly tortured him over years?
I guess we would have to assume that there is something somewhere that would be a huge plot hole, like something in a conversation between Ben and Saeed where like somebody in the writer's room was like, yeah, but he's going to remember, he would have remembered this, this, and this, or something like that. I can't think of one. And honestly, it in this moment feels like it would have been fine if Ben just survived. You know, like, that's a traumatic thing for a child to go through, being shot. So, like, how much of that he would even remember 20-some years later? Then again, it is Ben. And he has file folders for everything. So, it would be weird that if Saeed shot him as a child, that adult Ben does not have that in a file folder somewhere in his adult life.
Yeah. Or would tell him? Like, Richard could tell him at any point.
Sure. Yeah. Because Richard definitely knows.
I think they were just trying to like keep this time travel thing from being as unmessy as possible. And so they were like, okay, the only, like, we've established whatever happened. Check. Mm-hmm. The only messy thing is Ben Linus is definitely alive in this timeline. So I feel like this whole like shooting Ben and dropping Ben in the pool and stuff like that is just, the whole thing is a way to deal with the fact that Ben was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they would. Yeah.
And I guess, you know, the temple thing, which I remember it happens at the end of next week's episode. Because there's a lot of trying to save Ben the old fashioned way. But then they have to try the old fashioned way, which is at the temple. It does. I mean, the erasing Ben's memory thing is an interesting story choice. Mm-hmm. But it also does, right, like, this idea that Ben comes back different after this experience, and this is sort of what, you know, leads him down his path of evil, I think is a really interesting, like, time loop question. Because it's not about, like, whether Ben... What the show is trying to get us to go for is, like, this whole incident where they traveled back, like this thing that Ben was a part of that ended up with Saeed back on the island, ultimately is what causes Ben to be evil as an adult. Right? Because I think what's coming is that Ben not only survives, but is a little bit different after this.
He came back wrong.
Came back wolf-brained, like mm-hmm. Jon Snow.
Like Jon Snow should have. I talked about that on, I was on the Slash Film cast last night talking about WandaVision, and I definitely talked about Jon Snow as a wolf.
I mean, Jon Snow wolf-brain. I'm going to talk about it
I don't
it
think
so
we should ever let that one go.
That when there's eventually a remake of Game of Thrones because George R. R. Martin
they
finishes
have
the books.
To do it.
We'll come back with a wolf-brain. I feel like maybe at this point they could have left it open. And yes, Joanna, you're right. It could have been super messy. But I'm not sure they're that concerned with super messiness. This feels more like as they're sort of figuring out the Ben thing, they figure out something cool about the temple because they think the temple's cool, but they haven't finished. They haven't finished writing out the beginning of season 6 and realize the temple's not cool. Because to me, Ben in the water, the magical healing water, and coming back wrong, it feels like they have to re-justify that by making the same thing happen to Saeed. Like, this episode does a good enough job pairing Ben and Saeed going forward. I feel like we didn't have to, like, sacrifice Saeed's character at the altar of consistency.
It's so... makes me feel like I'm taking crazy pills, like, when I think about what happens to Saeed in the final season, not just because I think it's a real waste of Davina Andrews, who as we all agree, is very good. But what happens to him isn't the same as what happens to Ben, because, like, I don't know, the water's corrupted because of, like, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. But, like, if it were the same thing, like, if whatever is different about Ben were similar to whatever's different about, but Saeed turns into, like, a freaking zombie. It's mm-hmm. so different. Yeah. So it just, I hate that temple pool. I don't get the rules. It makes me feel like I got a screw loose. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't. It's funny. I don't remember hating the temple, but I hate the temple water for sure.
Mm. Well, and how far back does that? I mean, we'll talk about this next week when Richard says all of this. But, like, how far back does that memory erasure go? Like, because he still remembers his dad enough to, like, kill him later, right? So, like,
we assume
remembers his mom, and he remembers Annie and, like, stuff like that. So, like, why?
Oh, we don't talk about Annie.
Does it just erases the last 24 hours?
Or the last 3 years? Like, does he remember Sawyer and Juliet?
Oh, is yeah, that, I guess.
You know, like, question, you know?
It resets him back to the last flash?
Sure.
Well, because...
Like, why? I mean, that's the best I can do.
We've been holding on to this, like, you look just like her.
Yeah.
Idea that it could possibly be Juliet, and then this time thing makes it seem like it could be plausible. But then you're right. If he's going to remember Juliet, he's going to remember Sawyer. And so what happens when Sawyer shows up on the island?
Maybe here, okay, new theory. 10 years later, this is the best I can do. Maybe Ben is lying about forgetting. Because as we know, Ben Linus is top tier liar.
Quit so the lie and Linus.
So the memory erasure thing is a total cover, and he remembers all of it. That's my theory.
Hmm. I mean, that does make Ben, like, if you're gonna make Ben the super complex antagonist who's going to get sadly tricked into killing God, like, mm-hmm. why not allow him to be super mysterious? I feel like
well, and okay, so the story is, I was taken to a magical temple, dunked in some water, and I forgot 3 years. What sort of person would make that up?
Right. Well, I don't think
Ben Linus.
I don't think he even says it. I think it's just Richard says it, right? Like, he's going to forget it. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
like, you could be right. I don't know how it affects Ben. Like, first of all, the island doesn't seem to operate consistently in any sort of manner. So, who's Richard to be saying what rules are happening? Like, it just, the island has a will.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like the Widmore Ben rules. It's like, who came up with these stupid rules?
Yeah.
You guys are just assuming that
he's
these
making
are the rules.
These rules. Have you guys ever asked how your god got here? Huh? Do you know about his smoke brother? Ask about the smoke brother. Which religion is right?
Ask what your smoke brother could do for you.
all right, more questions that I have that I can maybe get mad about. So Ben is having Saeed kill people who he says are working for Widmore, and he claims that Widmore had Nadia killed and that these people were involved. We don't get any further backstory on that. It's like, do we think that Ben's actually fighting some sort of shadow war against Widmore, or do you think Ben just has a kill list for various reasons?
Two things. Number one, I definitely think those are Widmore's men and or women, people. And I think that he's trying to destabilize his arch nemesis by manipulating the grief of an assassin he happens to know. But I also feel like Ben killed Nadia as well.
Mm.
Yeah. Well.
That's what I think. I think he, I mean, I know that there's like photos, but listen, it's Ben. So I think if I had to, you know, please do email us. What is it? host@stormpodcast.com. If you disagree. But if I had to, like, tell you what I think happened, I think Ben kills Nadia so that he has Saeed where he wants him, so that he could use Saeed to wipe Widmore's players off the board. Because he killed Abaddon. He's a Widmore guy.
He
right?
did. He so. Did. Kill. Yep. But he killed Abaddon. I'm
I know,
just saying,
but he's like,
you got
he's like, I can't. Go ahead.
I agree that he gets Saeed. It's the Saeed's the weapon. Ben can point him at anything. I'm just saying, I don't. I feel like Widmore, when he decides to go to the island, has all of his men that he needs. You know, like I'm just not exactly, I don't doubt the show. I just don't think the show returns to this as an outside of this plot line in terms of like, what was, like, what were these people doing for Widmore that he didn't get accomplished, he doesn't get accomplished by the beginning of next season. Maybe that's something you guys have to answer for us.
Yeah, I don't know. I will say this. I looked it up in the transcript, and I think one thing we skimped over in the calm is that they do name the character who gets killed. It's Andropov. So we have...
unforgettable Andropov.
Right.
Who could forget when Andropov enters Buchanan. The church at the end and with Mikhail?
Oh, Mikhail. At least Mikhail's in The Flash sideways. That's what I'll say about that. Mikhail and Kimi in the same episode? Ooh, boy. Anyway. Yeah. That's what I mean, you're definitely right that when Widmore shows up to the island, he's got plenty of people with him. But one of those people is Zoe, who's also like, who's just right behind Rudzinski as like one of the worst characters on Lost. So I'll say that Widmore's not bringing his best men to the island in the final season.
While we're rating bespectacled people on the island who are the worst, what about Lenin? Is that his name? The Dojin?
I can't be anti-Lenin because he's played by John Hawkes, right, who is a king. So I just
so he's the one
character.
That's another bespectacled sidekick that gets the pass.
Is it a bad character? Yes. Do I love him anyway? Yes, because it's John Hawkes. So yes, yeah, John Hawkes and Titus Welliver to come. I think that's it. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's more.
It was really fun while we were doing our Deadwood watch with the Slack to continue to refer to Titus Welliver as Titus Welliver from The Mandalorian. Yeah. Because I could not say Titus Welliver from Lost because we have not, I didn't know who was in there, Calm or Storm, and I didn't want to like be like, oh my God, it's the man in black from Lost. Oh, that was
Bosch?
Fun. Sure, Bosch.
Bosch. Yeah.
Respect Bosch on Bosch's here. Name.
Right.
May not be the paycheck we remember the most, but it's been a consistent paycheck for him, and we will bow.
I will always remember him.
Or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think number one is still the Lost. I mean, he's great as the Man in Black, somehow, even though that storyline's weird. But we'll get there.
And then something we have to...
Six seasons of Bosch exist. Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Time for just the Bosch movie. all right. It's time to probe booty, booby, Boozy Booty Fett, and remember who hired Alana, which is Jacob. She's not been hired by Golf Course Man, even though I'm sure Golf Course Man's family misses him. But she's been hired by Jacob to get Saeed to the island, which Joanna points out means that both Ben and Jacob are trying to get people to the island. But really only Jacob would be the one with any sort of knowledge that he was succeeding. So Ben was just like cool with letting Saeed and Hurley maybe not get there, I guess, because Jacob took care of it.
Yeah. Alana just really bothers me because it seems like an uncharacteristically proactive move on Jacob's part. Jacob's all about like gently nudging you along the way. And then like with Saeed, he's like, okay, yo, I'm gonna hire a bounty hunter who's also maybe my daughter to like come get. I mean, that feels not Jacob to me in terms of our understanding of the way that Jacob likes to sort of like, I'm gonna change the winds so the Black Rock crashes here. You know what I mean? It feels a little aggressive.
Can we fix Alana, who is not Jacob's daughter? She is instead a mercenary who comes from a Russian burn unit into Lost and then blows herself up with dynamite in arts-like fashion. Is there a way that this character could have, with minor tweaks, been something interesting?
I mean, do you think it would be better if she was his daughter? Which is, just for folks who are going to Google this, it's something that the actress had said was she revealed at some point in an interview that the initial idea was for Alana to be Jacob's daughter. Do you think it would be better if she was related to Jacob? Or would that... I feel like that would maybe cause too many more questions. Like, who's her mother? And, like, what's going on there?
So, apparently, Caesar, the character Caesar, who is going to be shot soon by Ben, because I believe the actor did not want to be the show. I don't know. We'll talk about that when we get there. Apparently, Caesar's supposed to be an agent of Widmore eventually, I believe.
Mm.
So what if we just shrink all of this down and say, what if Alana were working for Widmore, which would make sense to me,
okay,
to Trojan Horse herself via Saeed, like, onto this, what's Ben up to, back to the island, right? So she lands on the island, sends some sort of signal out to Widmore, a sort of Naomi Redux kind of thing, right? To be like, hey, this is where the island's moved to, bro. Come get us. And then we never have to have a Zoe at all. It's just Ilana the whole time. She can still bring John Locke's body to the temple and dump it out and stuff like that, because Widmore knows stuff about the island lore that he might have downloaded to her, his lieutenant. But, like, just make her both Caesar and Zoe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all very tidy.
Yeah.
Because I like her whole vibe. Her whole vibe works for me. It's not like the performance isn't working for me. It's not like the vibe isn't working for me. She's wearing, like, a vest on the island. I think that's very cool. But the character frustrates me because it just feels like they couldn't figure it out, so then they just literally blew her up. There's some good stuff for her in season 6 with, like, Ben. I don't know if you guys remember, but there's, like, this really good stuff with her where she's, like, you know, Ben is having his, like, real crisis after he kills Jacob and stuff like that. And he's, and he has to, she makes him, like, dig his own grave because she's so mad that he kills Jacob, which, as Widmore's lieutenant, I think she still would be.
Right.
You know, and he's like, no one will have me. And she's like, you could be on my team, basically. And, like, Michael Emerson, great stuff from him. And I think great stuff from her in that episode. So it's not like I don't like that character. I just don't like that they tried to figure out some really tricksy.
Yeah, I guess, what doesn't work about her is that she's a devotee to Jacob instead of, like, an actual mercenary.
Island, like an off-island acolyte.
Yeah. Like, the lady who stored John Locke's body, we don't know her story, but she may have never been to the island. There are people, but those, like, are more off, like, island people.
Other
but.
Network people, like others. And this is like
a
deeper, hardcore acolytes of Jacob people that, like, even the others don't seem to know about. Richard doesn't seem to know who Alana is. Like, she gives him a passcode and he's like, okay.
Yeah.
But, like, Richard isn't even really aware of, like, Alana and her people. So it's a little, I have questions.
I still think
one layer too many.
I still think the series had a great opportunity for a real off island Richard. And, it could have.
I mean, they've had several at this point.
I mean, it could have
been. Abaddon was another good one.
It could have been Abaddon. It could have been Alana. It could have been what Ethan's role was back in, like, the Juliet day. But I think they sacrificed it when they let Jacob leave the island whenever he wanted to. Because if that happens, there's no purpose for off-island people, which I think is what Joanna was, like, getting at. Which is, like, usually Jacob doesn't get this super involved. For him to come to a person and heal her in order to make her, like, a soldier seems very involved. And then I think it'd be even more confusing if it was his daughter, because it's like, well, why are you putting all these people through these fucking tests when you have a daughter? Why can't you just teach your daughter how to be a good steward of the island? You know,
right.
Not that I want to set up a monarchy, but set up a monarchy.
You know, and then the whole idea, like, the candidates, but, like, letting the non-candidates sort of survive for a little while. I don't know. It is going to be very interesting to watch, to discuss when we talk about the finale, this pivot to Jacob being, like, directly involved with our candidates, our losties, is a really sort of fascinating turning point for the show.
Yeah. I guess it really makes it double down because it brings the show ultimately to, like, a universal ending because it circles back to the characters. But it goes through some weird, specific dogma stuff that, like, is going to be the problem when you manifest a god on your fictional show. I think it eventually gets through it. But if you were just talking about absent god, like, there's a reason the absent god storyline plays so well. It's because you can't prove that it's fiction. like for a lot of religious people, you know, the idea that you're living in an absent God is a fiction, but it's a fiction that's terrifyingly close. Like, you know, me dying to accidental gun violence is for me. So to make it really specific also, it feels like is when you could start poking weird holes in it, which is probably the story of season 6, where On Island timeline just right up its own ass, like so far that we can't shit it out. But then Sideways timeline, it slowly reveals that it's actually the conclusion that we want. So I don't know, but maybe next week is the beginning of the long crawl up the ass. We'll have to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I do think that the way that saving Ben becomes like their undoing in their undercover, I mean, all of that really works. The like
mm-hmm.
Kate and Juliet versus Jack, there's some real good shit coming up directly. Juliet being super pissed at Jack, delicious, serve it to me on a platter. you know, all of that stuff is pretty strong. So even if this was like a, okay, we need to figure out a way that Ben doesn't remember the Losties, they make you know, plenty of hay out of it. So, and I will admit, like, if I didn't know that the temple sucks, an upcoming episode ends with Richard carrying Ben and then just sort of like backing up into the temple doorway, which, you know, if I like, if I didn't know what disappointment was coming, I'd be like, whoa, cool.
There's a temple.
What's gonna happen?
Maybe that's where Jacob is.
Yeah.
You know, it's a top tier jungle of mystery moment, I think. Like, I remember that being like wild. Like, what the hell are they doing with that kid? So, yeah.
Why are the others so obsessed with bodies?
It's just when you unfurl it all the way to the end of the show, it gets weird.
Well, speaking of episode titles that are probably going to be rules that we have coming up, Neil, where are we going next week?
We are going to see whatever happened. It's Kate episode. It is the, for folks in the storm, it's when we finally get the answer to what happened to Aaron. So that'll be fun to lay on people. And yeah, we get to see the Ricardus carrying young Ben into
Cassidy
the temple.
Cassidy is coming back.
Yeah.
She has a lot to say about Sawyer. That was my little storm droplet in the calm where I was like, I bet Cassie has a lot to say about Sawyer. She's about to say it.
So yeah, join us on Saturday night. I'll be hosting that live watch. It's going to be fun.
And until then, where can people find more of your work online? Joanna Robinson.
Oh, you can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. I've got a podcast for two podcasts of Vanity Fair. I do. One is called Little Gold Men. The other is called Still Watching. We just are wrapping up WandaVision, and then we will be rolling on over, staying in the House of Mouse for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So check it out.
Fun.
And Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at the filmschoolrejects.com, on Twitter at rejects at one perfect shot. This month we are doing our giant monster bracket, which is great. And you can also get me in our Patreon Slack, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, to sign up for that. My next Stream Together Watch Alone project show announcement is coming soon.
Cool.
Soon. Yeah.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast about pop culture and here every week at the end of this podcast telling you to not fall down. And you know what? Don't get thrown either. Probably just as safe.